Welcome to the Film Experience. I'm your host, Nathaniel, and I'm here with your other host, Murtada.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to be talking about Jojo Rabbit, as well as Best Original Screenplay and Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, so Jojo Rabbit expanded into more theaters this week, so that's a reason to talk about it. Hopefully more of you have seen it, and we can spoil a little bit more.
Yes. And for those who have been living under a rock, or sleeping under a rock, whatever the expression is, and haven't heard of it, they're dubbing it an anti-hate satire, and it takes place during World War II, and it's about a little Nazi boy who discovers that his mom is hiding a Jewish girl in their attic. So it sounds like a heavy drama, but it's actually an absurdist comedy.
I love the marketing has to spell it out because they're afraid people are not going to understand.
Well, I mean, people really aren't going to understand because people are already, like, I've read a lot of people being outraged about it, and I guess we can start there. Maybe it's not the right climate for satire because we're in a period where everyone is, in some cases, rightfully offended. But we're in a period where there's heightened awareness of injustices, which is great, but I think people have become more literal. So satire is difficult for people.
There is that, but I also find it just unsuccessful satire. My reaction to it was just blah. I hear your point about maybe people are not open. But just last year, we had the Lakeith Stanfield movie. What was it? I can't believe I'm always forgetting names. Sorry to bother you. And that was satire. And it was not a big hit movie, but it was definitely, critically at least, better reviewed than Jojo Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I find some of the arguments about things that take on naturally controversial subject matter to be kind of disingenuous, as if people actually think it's sympathetic to Nazis, which I think is, I don't know, to me that's crazy, because to me, to make something cartoonishly buffoonish for your satire from a child's point of view is not the same as endorsing something. So I'm a little surprised. I'm not saying, and I'm not even talking about whether the movie is successful or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about people taking natural offense to it without even bothering to accept what it's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's trying to your point, you know, tell a story like the marketing says, anti-hate.
Yeah.
But I just found it middling, completely mm-hmm. unfunny, especially Taika Waititi as Adolf Hitler. All the scenes that he's in, it's just like a bad SNL sketch. And he's been funny and irreverent before, so
mm-hmm.
Didn't work for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to make my top 10 list or anything, and I'm not a huge defender of it, but I did think it was successful in its, you know, what in its like absurd goals. So I was a little surprised that people were, I mean, I guess the reviews are all over the place. Some people do love it. I mean, it did win, you know, it's winning some audience awards. And,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, the first critics out of Toronto were terrible. And everybody said, this movie's dead. And then it won the audience award, and everybody's like, it's winning the Oscar for Best Picture. And so somewhere between those two extremes lies this movie. I looked at the box office before I started talking to you just to see how it's doing. And it's doing okay, but it's not doing great. Like, it's not on the same sort of trajectory of other Fox Searchlight movies around this time. But also, is that because it's not finding its audience? It's because just indie movies in general are not doing as well as they did 2 or 3 years ago. So who knows?
Well, I mean, I think there's still time for it to find its audience. It was doing very well up until, I haven't looked at this weekend's charts, but before it expanded, it was doing very, very well. Like not quite Parasite levels, but Parasite is sort of like its own unique success story. So if it didn't expand that well this weekend, I think there's still time for them to rescue it.
I was just comparing it to the other movies that Fox Searchlight took to the Oscars, not with actually these movies this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be just doing, it's not doing bad. It's just doing slightly less than something like, you know, The Favorite or, you know, Birdman or all these movies that were released around this time and found multiple Oscar nominations and wins.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I've, you know, said many times and people were really mad at me for this last year, you know, the complete story takes a while to, you know, I kept warning people, like, don't call Green Book a flop. It is not a flop. You're just used to blockbuster numbers now. And then Green Book, of course, became a very big hit, but it took a while, you know.
Yeah,
so,
this could take a while too. Yeah.
I mean, it all depends on how awards go. And, you know, once you get momentum of being like a major nominee, if you have anything like crossover appeal, people will eventually find you if you do well in the awards.
Yeah, I mean, if it gets 6 nominations or whatever, I'm sure more people will see it. Absolutely.
So back to the quality of the movie, or lack thereof. So you did not enjoy it. I enjoyed it, but it's not one of my favorites of the year. What part did you think, what part, you called it middling, so that means you didn't hate it. So, like, what part did you think was most successful about it?
I thought, again, I'm turning into a Scarlett Johansson stan. I thought her scenes and her story was the most successful part, which is maybe the least whimsical part of the film. I thought hers is sort of like the most realistic story. She's the mom of this Nazi boy who treats him like a child who, you know, is living this fantasy world. She doesn't know everything, but she has her own story. And also her story is just told, maybe because they were evasive in telling her story. It was just, I like how tidy and not giving us a lot of information about what she was doing. She's obviously doing something big. I mean, the story is set in the waning days of World War II, so sometime in 1944.
Yeah.
When the war is almost over and everybody's sort of thinking Germany's going to lose except the little Nazi boy who's our hero. So they give us little hints of what she could be doing, this woman who seems righteous, who seems lovely, who seems a great mom, who has values, and you sort of can suspect what she's doing, and then the story reveals it in a way that was kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the best part of the film. But anytime Taika Waititi was on, I was just like, oh, girl.
See, I thought he was, I don't agree with that at all, because I thought his broadness, as you said, SNL, I think was completely pitched to exactly what it needed to reveal, to be like, make no mistake, this is from a child's point of view, and this is like buffoonery, you know, so, I don't know. It worked for me. I did think the tonal shifts, because it does, you know, take darker turns, and, you know, naturally with the Scarlett Johansson story and also with the ending, you know, I did think it had some problems on the dismount, let's say that.
Yeah.
Of how to wrap up the story, given that it's like a satire and given that, you know, World War II was this awful, you know, tragedy for so many people.
I do want to just add to the Taika Waititi performance. Like, I thought playing Hitler as a buffoon is very obvious, but also how else can you play him to land this satire thing, right? Like, you have to play him with a little, you have to to make him an idiot. Like, there is no other way to do it. I just don't think maybe the... So he definitely made the right choice to play him as an idiot, as a buffoon. That's the right choice. But maybe just the modulation of the performance wasn't just... I didn't laugh even once with... Not even once with Teika. You know who was funny? Jojo's friend. So Jojo goes to this camp, Hitler Youth camp, and he goes with this friend of his, and who is also 9 or 10 or however old they are, I don't know. But then who becomes an actual soldier in the German army, because I guess they ran out of men or whatever, that's the story. And it's those scenes where he's like in his soldier uniform and just trying to shoot things and completely being unsuccessful. That actor, I don't know his name. He's wonderful. He's funny.
He's funny, yeah.
If he doesn't have an agent, somebody should grab him right now. He's a star in the making.
Yeah. What did you think of Thomasin McKenzie? Because I've heard very... What?
I thought she was very flat, which is very surprising because she was so amazing last year in...
Leave No Trace.
In Leave No Trace, the Deborah Granik film. I felt nothing. Like, I know she's supposed to be the crux of the, like, of where the depths of emotion should come from. This young woman hiding in the attic and all of that. But, and maybe because most of her scenes are with the young boy, and a lot of it, and I can feel why people could be offended, because a lot of it are them making bad jokes about Jewish people. And yes, it's not true. It's like what a Nazi child would think of Jewish people. I know that's not true. I wasn't offended, but I also just thought, like, okay. Like, I didn't feel anything, because the conversation is about stereotypes of Jewish people, very terrible stereotypes of Jewish people. Mostly, that's what she's doing. She's in those scenes. And I was just like, okay. So it maybe prevented me from feeling for her, because that text of what she was saying was that.
Like a lot of people, I'm really curious to see whether Oscar responds to the acting in this movie, because I did think it was kind of all over the place in terms of success, in terms of the actors. I love Scarlett Johansson, but as much as I loved her, I think she maybe has the easiest role in the piece.
Obviously, the most obviously sympathetic.
Yeah, and but with Thomasin McKenzie, it was a little modern for me, her performance. And given the text and given, what they were doing, I thought Rebel Wilson was terrible.
Always terrible. Always.
But I thought, like, Sam Rockwell was good. Like, so I was kind of all over the place with the performances.
And Rebel Wilson, I think he cut her off the movie. She's in, like, 2 seconds. Like, she literally appears, and then, boom, she's cut off. And then she appears again, and boom, she's cut off. I feel like she did way too many antics, and even Teika was, like, too much for this movie.
We're just saying a lot, considering what he's doing as Hitler.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we're mixed on it. I liked it way more than you did, and I admire how tricky it is in terms of, like, what it's going for.
Yeah.
And I really don't understand why some people are so offended, but that's just me. I tend to be as easily offended as other people, though.
A lot of critics are not offended. I read some reviews just to prepare for this, and most of it is just like, eh. And yes, there's definitely some who are offended, but I think most of it is just like, eh. And that's kind of my reaction to it. Completely.
So what do you?
It's just middling, blah, not funny when it's trying to be a comedy, which is, I think, the death of a comedy. If you have one actor in an ensemble of 7 or 8 who's funny, at least in my opinion, you're not successful.
Well, then what do you think audiences are seeing in it then? Because audiences do like it. I mean, it won the
I don't know. People's That's a question I can't answer. I don't know what they see in it. So yes, it won the thing, but it's also something easy, right? Like it's the marketing says to you, this is an anti-hate satire, and you go in and there are jokes. It's a script that's full of jokes, even though I didn't think they were funny, but it is a script that's full of jokes, but they are easy jokes. It's like went to the most obvious, to the easy, to the low hanging fruit. And I'm not saying people react to the low hanging fruit, but if you think a little bit about these jokes, they're not that funny.
Oh my God. You're like, I'm not saying it, but I'm saying it.
But anyway, I have to say, if, you know, last year we had an odious movie in the Oscar season, which was Green Book. If this is what we have to deal with, this, it's not that odious. It's just middling and obvious.
Well, since you're talking about audiences and enjoying low-hanging fruit, I have to say, change of subject, but to suggest that you all go back to Parasite now that you've probably seen it, to our Parasite podcast. I saw Parasite again last night, and there was a Q&A with the production designer.
Mm. Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And if you were in New York, I would highly suggest seeing the movie at the Walter Reed because it's a beautiful theater. There's no bad seats in that theater. I love that theater.
The best in the
And in the lobby, they have tons and tons of paintings of the production design of all the houses, like the blueprint of the house, all floors of the rich person's house in Parasite. So they have like maps of the entire place, basically. It's very cool. And so they had like a little reception afterwards, and none of this we knew. We just bought a normal movie ticket. I just wanted my friends to see it. So took friends, and then suddenly there was a Q&A and a wine and cheese reception.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. But the reason I bring this up is during the Q&A, for those who have seen Parasite, and even for those who haven't, early in the movie, the family, who are the main characters, the poor family, receive a gift of a stone that's like a scholar's stone. It's like kind of like a sculpture, and it's meant to give wealth to whoever holds it.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
Like a good luck charm scholar's stone. And so the main character, the youngest, or the son of the poor family, he just loves this stone that they have in their house. And he keeps saying, it's so metaphorical. Like literally that's his line of dialogue. And he says it like four times in the movie. And every time I was laughing, right? So, and the movie is, for all of its nuance and brilliance, it is very, it tells you really early on that it's a metaphorical movie about class disparity and economic inequalities and all that. So it really like spells it out for you, and then it gets deeper and more thoughtful. But it really does spell out what it's going to do. So in the Q&A afterwards, and bear in mind, this is a Q&A with the production designer. So like you shouldn't be asking him about actors or screenplay or anything like that. So the very last question in the Q&A was, but what did the scholar's stone mean?
Oh my God.
And so low-hanging fruit. I loved his answer, though. He said, for those who've seen the movie, he said, well, you know, I think that should be left up to the audience. But for me, it meant nothing. It was a rock that other people named something and imparted meaning, and other people received that meaning, which I thought was a good answer.
Yeah.
Just an example of sometimes audiences really want it spelled out for them even more than the marketing of an anti-hate satire, or this movie is about class disparity.
Yeah. I thought the production design in Jojo Rabbit was great, maybe the best part of it.
Yeah. There's another thing you liked about it.
So do you still think Thomasin McKenzie is going to be nominated? To have her in your supporting actress chart?
I keep waffling on this movie. I think it's, even though, you know, people, I don't want to say panic, but like armchair punditry at home, which we're all huge fans of, and which I started my career doing.
Yeah.
So people have a tendency to just like rush to like whatever a buzz is. That's everything changes, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really not how Oscar season plays out. So like when it won the People's Choice at TIFF, suddenly everyone's like, it's winning Best Picture. That's not really how things happen. You know, you have to go through all these waves, and now we're in the new wave of it open. If now it's going wide. So it's like a whole new ball game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I keep waffling on this movie. Like, I do think, for sure, it's getting into the Best Picture lineup. But the Best Picture lineup is, like, 8 to 10 movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's...
Is it in the top five? Right now. On the buzz right now.
I would say... Yeah. Yeah. The movie that I don't hear any buzz about... That I'm suddenly doubting, and I really don't want to because I love the movie. It's A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
And that hasn't opened yet. People it's should true. Be excited. I mean, it's, usually there is more excitement before the movie opens.
Exactly.
And there is
exactly.
none
That's
right
what
now.
I'm saying. And I'm a little like freaked out about that because I thought the movie was so good, and I thought it would have more momentum before its opening.
Mm-hmm. That's like Widow last year.
Yeah. So anyway. My point is, a long, elaborate point. I think Jojo Rabbit is a really, really remains a wild card. I could see it getting anywhere from, like, 8 nominations to, like, 2.
Yeah. And that's exciting for the Oscar race. Like, I always like it when we don't know. And I personally don't know how this movie is going to do because, yeah, it has so many indications either way.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk about screenplays where I think this is the one category where I feel like there's no way it's not going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That's
Do you
adapted,
agree?
Right?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. So you have now Jojo Rabbit, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, The Irishman, The Two Popes, Ford v Ferrari, which I just saw. And you have Little Women and Joker just outside.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't want to think about Joker being nominated, but, you know, I shouldn't have strong feelings about Joker. It's true, I have avoided it. I have not watched it. I just don't want to watch it. And I know I have to because clearly it's going to get a nomination at least here and there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be just Best Actor. I don't think you leave that movie thinking about the screenplay. It's more visually potent than the screenplay. But who knows, if they like it, it will get it. The movie that I think, I agree with you on Jojo Rabbit. Do you still think A Beautiful Day like has a good chance?
Well,
because
I think
The Irishman is that. If there is a lock there, I would think it's The Irishman.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that A Beautiful Day has a really good shot because the adapted screenplay category is kind of weak this year. Mm-hmm. One movie that's not currently on my chart, and I'm just realizing it. Oops. Sorry, everyone. Dolomite is my name. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember if that's considered an adapted or original.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So I will have to look that up and change the charts. Because I think if that's adapted, I think it's a more competitive category than I had thought. Because right now it seems like Little Women is the only thing that, you know, a lot of people think Little Women's a lock. I do not personally. I think it might, and I've always kind of doubted it in the Oscar mm-hmm. race. I think it might just be like a populist thing.
And the thing that I mean, neither of us have seen it, but the thing that I keep hearing about Little Women is that Greta Gerwig changed a lot of things and started in the middle of the story and then goes in flashback and changed the ending. And so that's a screenplay. So either people love it and they're like, yes, I love what she did, and yes, lock, or that's not my Little Women.
Right.
We'll see.
And you're likely to get both reactions within the writer's branch.
Yeah.
But all you need is, but you can't vote against a movie, so.
Yeah, so you can
All you need is enough fans.
Enough people who are like, I love this new version.
Yeah, but I mean, my chart right now, as always, needs to be updated. I would say the movie, I think, is the two, like, locks for, well, not locks, because they're not quite open yet, but I would say the Two Popes and The Irishman feel like locks for screenplay.
Where's Hustlers? Hustlers should be somewhere.
Oh, Hustlers, you're right. That should be on the chart, too. See, Hustlers is another thing. I want it to be a wild card, but I just don't think it's happening beyond Jennifer Lopez, which is disappointing because it's one of the year's really, really strong movies, and it was super popular. So it's like, if you want to reward cinema made for adults, this is a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, people don't think of it in that way, including apparently me, much to my dismay, because why is it not on my chart?
Like, just put it somewhere. So I think,
but yeah, it's like the mindset thing. And, you know, as like pundits who are also advocates, we're always trying to get people to widen their perspective a little bit. And yet it's easy to fall prey to that stuff, being like, well, it's not an Oscar movie, which is a horrible thing to say. Because if a movie is good, it should be an Oscar movie.
It's good. It's popular. It's definitely a movie people are talking about because they're talking about Jennifer Lopez. And also, this is somebody who wrote their own screenplay and directed. So it's got that buzz of like, yeah, maybe we won't nominate you for director, but you also wrote your own screenplay, so let's do that for Lauren Scafaria.
Yeah, and that would be great in adapted screenplay. It would be better than some of the options currently.
Yeah, I can't believe
I do think it's better than some of these options for adapted screenplay.
Definitely better than Ford v. Ferrari, which the most hokey screenplay ever. Terrible stock villain. Like, this is not a triumph of writing. Somebody who came up with that stock villain should not be rewarded for anything. I very middling on Ford v. Ferrari, but I think the screenplay is the worst part of it. And I know this is not you saying it's a good screenplay.
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why things might be nominated and merits. It's only part of it. With the original screenplay category feels way more competitive to me this year.
So it's Noah Baumbach versus Quentin Tarantino.
Versus Bong Joon-ho.
And
then I think that The Farewell and Bombshell also have a great chance here. I want Pain and Glory in there, of course. So we'll see about that.
I think he gets it's on Gold Derby.
Knives Out could be a surprise because people who love Knives Out really love it. And it seems like the type of movie that could get screenplay and nothing else.
I'm really curious about how critics are going to, not the critics are the whole story, but they're part of the story, are going to react to Bombshell, because Bombshell's screenplay has a lot of speeches and speechifying, which writers could be impressed by, but it's also kind of doesn't have, like, it revolves around the decision that the main character has to make. The decision has no stakes for the main character at all. Like, she could go either yes or no, and nothing happens to her. So I thought that was kind of why I was like, okay, so nothing is happening. Like, she could do this or not do it, and there are no stakes for her. So I thought that was a weakness in the script and in the movie. Although there are wonderful speeches for Margot Robbie, and, you know, so maybe that's what would push it over.
And when you say the main character, no stakes, you mean Megyn Kelly or Gretchen Carlson?
Yeah, it's Megyn Kelly. The thrust of the narrative is, will Megyn Kelly support Gretchen Carlson or not? And then, but it's presented as like, we know how that happens, but she has no stakes. She's going to keep her jobs and millions and everything. Like, it's just like, okay.
Interesting. So, I am seeing it tonight, actually.
Yeah. Sorry if I spoiled a little bit of it for you.
I know the story, having lived through it. No, thankfully, not lived through it in terms of, like, you know, lived through it through the media. Although I will say one of the tricky things about being, like, a media person in New York is that sometimes you find yourself in the Fox building.
Yeah.
And it's always really uncomfortable because you're thinking, this is where all the evil happens.
Yeah, well, you'll have 2 hours of that today. It's all from the Fox building.
Yeah, so, you know, because there's screenings there, there's, you know, other things.
I really hope Lulu Wang...
Well, when I go in there.
I just hope Lulu Wang is a shoo-in. It's a wonderful screenplay. I think it's such a triumph of balancing story and character, and she did such a good job with The Farewell.
Mm-hmm.
I would give her the Oscar if I could. Yes, Marriage Story is great and Once Upon a Time, but there is, in my opinion, there is not a better modulated screenplay than The Farewell.
I do love The Farewell screenplay, but I think Marriage Story and Parasite are, to me, it's going to be really hard to deny them in that category.
And those are good screenplays. Like, yeah. if we get these that you have your top four, those are good screenplays.
Yeah.
And I hope Pedro's in, too. I think Pedro, I am just going to keep saying it. Pedro's in for screenplay and director until it happens. I'm going to manifest it.
I was like, you're doing The Secret. You're like, this will happen. I think that's what The Secret is. I do not know.
Ooh, Nathaniel's secret.
No, I mean The Secret. I mean, like a self-help secret. And I'm realizing another film I don't have on my chart here, probably because it's not going to factor in, although I really, really think the screenplay is brilliant and people should be talking about it, but also has an open Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that is a masterful screenplay.
Okay, I'm on Gold Derby too. I'm sorry to give some clicks to the competition, but Dolomite Is My Name is on Original there.
Oh, okay. Well, see, Original is even more stacked than we thought. It's going to be a bloodbath, and deserving titles will be left off.
Yeah. It's always it varies sometimes, but it's always one or the other.
Yeah. You rarely have an equal, a balance between the two screenplay categories.
But who knows? You know, there are things like suddenly something that's deemed original is adapted or vice versa late in the season. Like January, suddenly it's like the WGA has deemed this movie original.
I mean, I could see that happening with The Two Popes this year. Cause it's, Anthony McCarten adapting his own play, but was that play ever produced? It's kind of like one of those gray areas.
He should just stay in adapted. Like, I don't understand. It should be, if you're in original, find a way to be adapted.
Yeah, but it's not your choice always.
True. Yeah, that's true.
It's your choice how you campaign. It's not your choice how the Academy. Although it's hilarious to me that they get persnickety about that sometimes in screenplay, because they don't seem to care about any other categorization. They're like, sure, you're in every scene and you're the protagonist. You're supporting. You said you were supporting, you're supporting. You know, they don't make any rulings about anything other than that, you know.
Yeah. So let's hope a beautiful, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm excited to see A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I love Marielle Heller. Let's hope it gathers up some buzz. I mean, it's coming out in 2 weeks, so this week would be the time when we will, I don't know, see Tom Hanks in some magazine covers giving an in-depth interview. But the thing with Tom Hanks is, what do we not know about him yet? Like,
I
think that's why he hasn't been nominated since Castaway. He's just such a well-known quality in everybody's life. Like, nobody
but
needs to be told anything about him.
But you could say the same about Meryl Streep, and that doesn't stop her from every nomination.
That's true, yeah.
Although, finally, she won't get nominated for something, because, like, literally no one's talking about The Laundromat.
Oh, my God. I started it. I didn't see it, but we started the other day on Netflix, and we haven't finished it yet. A week later, we haven't finished it.
It's not a ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
I'm so far behind, and this always happens to me, and now it's November, and I'm like, how am I going to see all these movies by the end of the year? Even though we get the head start of, I would be lost without Toronto and other film festivals, because I can't imagine how people who don't go to film festivals keep up, because they all come out in the same 2 months.
Yeah. And so one movie really, we're not...
It's really hard to keep up.
One movie I assume you is not on your charts because you haven't seen it is Dark Waters, and that's adapted. I've seen that. It's like, it's not my number one movie of the year or my favorite, even though it's by my favorite director, Todd. I love him. But it's not worse than some of these titles here that have buzz. Like, its screenplay, it's good. It's based on a New York Times article, which is it's Aaron Brockovich with Mark Ruffalo as Aaron. So it's the kind of thing, like, if it finds its audience, it could be, it has like a thrust, and like you end the movie like, yeah, those fuckers, corporations, like it has that thing. And so you leave the movie like, yeah. So I see it could contend, but if we think Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood has no buzz, that one has minus buzz. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it happens. And then, of course, there's Cats. It was not even going to be finished in time for all the awards screenings.
Yeah, are the BFCA going to add Cats later? As right. Our 13th nominee. Cats.
We didn't have the opportunity to see this, so we're changing our nominations.
They'll find a way to get it into the Golden Globes. They'll have to. Like, I can see them being like, New York Film Critics, they're never going to give us anything. Those right, people, right. SAG, we don't care. But they'll find a way with the Golden Globes. I think they will.
Yeah, so it's a very exciting times ahead. Well, we have it's a short little podcast this week. I hope you enjoyed our conversation of Jojo Rabbit and the screenplay categories.
And I apologize if you love Jojo Rabbit for my opinions on it. But
never shy away from your strong opinion.
Just my opinion.
But I'm off to a Marriage Story event, and I'm hoping Scarlett is there. But, you know, she's in high demand, so who knows?
She has not been showing to stuff. It's always Adam and Laura and Noah and Alan Alda, yeah. Who's so lovely. So this is your mission. Should you accept it, Nathaniel? We want a photo of you with Alan Alda, who's the best.
Okay.
So lovable and nice.
Yeah. And, but of course, if I see Laura again, my old friend Laura, I'm just kidding. She's very sweet though. She's like one of these stars who like is very friendly with press. She's really fun to talk to.
And before we go,
to see her. And then also, a bombshell event afterwards, which I, from my understanding, Charlize will actually be there.
Oh, nice.
So it's all happening, listeners. It's all happening. The campaigns are out in force this month.
Nice. Good, good, good. I'm going to an event, too, for this animated movie, I Lost My Body. So no stars there, but the director is going to be there.
And the buzz on that one is very strong, actually.
Yeah, so we'll see. It could get into the animated feature category. So we'll have to do that in the next podcast. Next week, we'll do Marriage Story.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go in depth. Hopefully more people would have seen it. It's out in New York and LA now. Thank you so much for listening.